We're back here on WBAL News Radio 1090. We are joined by a very special guest. He's one of my favorite baseball writers around. He is a best-selling New York Times author, and he has a book out now called Up, Up, and Away about the Montreal Expos. Out everywhere, out in paperback, we're talking to Grantland's Jonah Carey. Jonah, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I can say this now, that one of my few claims to fame is that I am your 100,000th Twitter follower. And you let me know that after I became that, which I think is pretty cool on your part, so thank you. But that's quite an accomplishment just to get to that number. And then for me to be that number for you, I think that's pretty cool.
So I'm going to attempt the rare feat of being able to say thank you for saying that, and also to completely diminish that supposed accomplishment. Twitter is basically, you follow me, my dad follows me, and then there's 99,998 bots. I'm convinced that Twitter is a grand conspiracy and that I don't actually know people in real life. So I appreciate you, the support, but, you know, it's a number. It's pretty much a made-up currency.
We're talking to Jonah Carey. Baseball is here. Jonah, what's your level of enthusiasm for the 2015 season?
Oh, it's always enthusiastic. I mean, it's a great time of year. You get some great stories. Chris Bryant's hitting a million home runs. He's going to sit in the minor leagues. That's kind of fun. You got a new generation of teams coming up. Cleveland looks dangerous. Seattle, Toronto, the Marlins, the Cubs. And then just the usual, you know, intriguing storylines, you know, with various players and teams coming up and what's going to happen. And, you know, Giancarlo Stanton, a great young player, and Andrew McCutchen, and Mike Trout, and Clayton Kershaw, and Jose Abreu, and there's just so many stars in baseball right now, and it's a fun time of year.
Yeah, it is. And going back to that Chris Bryant thing, because it's current,
yep.
To me, the union going out and even threatening litigation over the Chicago Cubs, to me, I think is a little ridiculous. Calling it dangerous for the game, I think is a little ridiculous coming from the Baseball Players Union. I can point to a number of examples in the 90s and 2000s, things they did that was somewhat detrimental to the game of baseball.
Well, I mean, ultimately, whatever you think of the history of the union or don't think of the history of the union, the bottom line is you need to prove something. And if Theo Epstein is saying, or Jed Hoyer or whoever is saying, yeah, this is for baseball reasons and we want him to develop or whatever, how are you going to disprove that exactly? They can
right.
make anything up. They can say, oh, yeah, Chris Bryant scratches himself too much when he's in the batter's box. Therefore, it's distracting. He needs 9 more games to work it out in the minor leagues. There's no way that you're going to be able to win that grievance. I get the idea of at least making a show of it. Obviously, it's being done to manipulate service time. There's no question about it. But this is all in the collective bargaining agreement. You can pretty much do whatever you want with a player. You can send him down, and you don't have any recourse. And if you're really concerned about the thing, then work out a way, if you can, to figure out that the service time isn't manipulated that way. That requires negotiation across the table from the owners, and it's something that has to take place before the next CBA is signed. This is not, and that's a year and a half away. So, yeah, do whatever you want. Rattle whatever cages you want, but you're not changing the rules, and you're not going to change the Cubs' mind.
Yeah, it's also funny to me, and I'm not the biggest Scott Boras fan there is, and that's an easy side to take, or it's an easy side to take to be the biggest Scott Boras fan. But it's funny when he speaks out on behalf of a player in this instance when, let's just say, something local to hear, Matt Wieters busts his elbow. He won't be ready for opening day the next year. Probably doesn't negotiate in good faith with the Orioles when they were very serious about extending him, and he plays the gamble on a client like Wieters. Where's someone lashing out against him in a circumstance like that? For Scott, it's always a one-way street of victory.
I mean, he wants the most money for his clients, and he has a very good track record of doing it. And you could say that it would be nice for teams if Boras was more open to signing contracts before players hit free agency, but if he views it as against his client's best interest, then that's his right to try to negotiate something better. I mean, ultimately, these are kind of free market things and kind of things dealing with the laws of the land. I mean, if that's the way players are going to make the most money, then that's the way it has to be. And if teams are really concerned about it and don't like the way that Boras negotiates, fine, then throw $200 million at Matt Wieters before he ever gets to free agency. And then I guarantee you Scott Boras signs on the dotted line.
Yeah.
This idea of getting a hometown discount or whatever, it's very quaint, sounds great to me and you, to fans and whatever, but you know, Boras' job is to get the most money for his clients, and Tony Clark's job is to look after the interests of the union, and the Cubs' job is to make as much money and win as many World Series, which maybe the latter is difficult to do if you're a Cubs fan, but that's their job too. And so, you know, sometimes these interests are going to conflict with each other, and you just do the best you can to get around it.
Jonah Carey from Grantland is with us here on WBAL News Radio 1090. You didn't get to preview the AL East, Jonah, for Grantland, but looking at that division right now, how do you think it stacks up?
It's a two-tier division to me. I think that Baltimore, Boston, and Toronto can all make cases as a possible contender to win the division, and I view the Yankees and the Rays as a step below. The Orioles, of course, come up with 96 wins. very, very good season, but they do lose Cruz and Marquez, which is going to hurt the offense. The theory, of course, being that if Machado and Wieters are back and healthy, and mind you, we just talked about Wieters at least missing the start of the season, but if they're going to play a good chunk of the season, that could make up for Cruz and Marquez and maybe even more. So that'll be something to watch. You know, there's hope for Kevin Gausman. There are all kinds of good scenarios here for the O's, but, you know, the Jays are a very good team too. And so you look at Marcus Stroman, you know, him being out for the year, that maybe dings them a little bit, but they also picked up Josh Donaldson and Russell Martin, so that's a good sign. And then the Red Sox, well, their pitching's not so great. They got a bunch of number four starters, but they probably have the best lineup in the American League. So all these things are in play. I can't say that one team is absolutely dominant. I'm definitely obviously picking this team over another team, but I would say that if you had to make a case for any of the three, I wouldn't even bat an eyelash. I could see the Red Sox winning the division, I could see the Blue Jays winning the division, and I certainly could see the Orioles winning the division.
Talking about Grantland for a moment here, Jonah, to me, I love your baseball coverage on it. I would say as far as mainstream sites go, you guys probably incorporate, for the casual fan and slightly above average fan, probably more sabermetrics than most sites. Is that a balancing act between how much you want to incorporate and then how much you think might just come across as minutia to most fans?
Well, the way that I do it is I try to explain it in English. I really don't use VORP and BIP and ZIP
right.
and DRIP. I try to say, you know, somebody has a WRC plus of 125. What the heck does that mean? It
right.
means that if you're a Baltimore Oriole and you adjust for the effects of Oriole Park at Camden Yards and you hit so-and-so, you are 25% better than league average. That's it. That's all I'm saying. Everybody understands what the number 25 is, and everybody understands what average is. So I think if you do it that way, that's the way to get the message across. And, I mean, that fits with my background. I understand the advanced stats, but my background is a journalism guy. I went to journalism school. I've been a professional writer for 20 years, and that's the way I have to convey things. My job is to tell the story, and you don't want numbers to get away in the way of the story. You actually want it to enhance the story. So if I'm going to tell a tale about something, then I need to make it clear why I'm including this number. What does this number bring to the equation that is going to improve both reader comprehension and maybe even reader entertainment? And, you know, that's something that our bosses are very good about, encouraging us to do. My colleague Ben Lindbergh, who works alongside me, is great at that, too. He's a great writer who understands the numbers. And we do the best that we can. And so far, not too many hate letters, so we'll keep going and see what happens.
How much have you enjoyed the experience at Grantland?
Oh, it's awesome. It's When I got the day that I got an email from this guy, Dan Fearman, who runs the site, he's a managing editor, he sent me the email, said, you know, we like your work, we want to try you out and see how it goes. And he said, the one rule we have at Grantland is, I'll try to say this radio friendly, no blank holes is what he said, basically. And so I said, oh, okay, I could do that. I'm a nice guy. I'm not that thing you just said, and that's fine. And that's how it comes across. No matter who it is, from the interns up to Bill Simmons, who, of course, started the site, everybody's just really cool and very supportive. And frankly, I get to write about kind of whatever I want to. If I want to write 7,000 words about Steve Pierce for some reason, they'd say, okay, you know, as long as you justify it, you can tell us why. Good, write the longest Steve Pierce story ever. And that's kind of fun and gives me an opportunity to try different things. Not, hey, here's another essay about Derek Jeter's legacy, which I like. I like to do things that are not quite what the rest of the mainstream is doing.
Yeah, I think that's the greatness of the site. We're talking with Jonah Carey from Grantland. We'll have another couple quick questions for him. And Jonah, big baseball issues right now. You've obviously written about it a lot, up and away, about the Expos. What are the odds, as you see it, of Montreal getting another baseball team?
A few years ago, I would have said there's no chance. Now I say there's at least some chance. And, you know, it's not me being delusional, because if anything, I was more negative than a lot of other people, despite being a big Expos fan. I'm in Montreal on a book tour promoting my book up and away about the Expos. I'm wearing an Expos T-shirt as I'm talking to you, and I was still negative about it. But I think you look at what's happened since then, and the landscape has changed. Starting with the exhibition games last year, 97,000 people showed up to Olympic Stadium to see the Blue Jays and the Mets play two random games with snow outside in a crappy stadium that was terrible 10 years ago, let alone now. And that was pretty impressive, and I'm going back this coming weekend, and they're expecting 80,000 plus for the two games, so 40 each probably, and that's going to be tremendous as well. And, you know, you've got that, and you've also got the commissioner, Rob Manfred, coming out on the record and being asked about the possibility of Montreal and saying, yep, it's a viable franchise. If they can get a new ballpark, they're definitely in the mix. We would explore the option of expansion at some point down the road. That's the commissioner of baseball. You know, this isn't some hoser like me coming out and saying, yeah, boy, I miss Tim Raines. It's these are real things. And, of course, the next step is they have to find a committed ownership group. And there are people in boardrooms here who have the money and the will to make something like that happen, who I know for a fact, based on my reporting, have, you know, at least entertained the conversation, and they've talked about it, and they've had some serious discussions, and we'll see where it goes from there. But The fact that it's being discussed, the fact that you're even asking me about it, tells you that it is something worth talking about that probably was not worth talking about a little while ago.
And one last question about this season and a lot of things being thrown out there right now by Rob Manfred as his days as commissioner really begin here. Between the clock and pace of the game discussion, where do you fall in all those matters?
I don't like the actual clock. One of the beauties of baseball is there is no clock. The only currency in the game is our outs, which is, by the way, the reason that people like me object to bunting so much. You are shortening the game. The only sure thing in baseball is you have three outs per inning, and if you're giving it up, then that's a big problem. So the fact that they're thinking about a clock is not my favorite. But, you know, one thing which is a possibility is that it's kind of a pressure tactic. If we're going to put this clock in the minor leagues, this is what could happen to you sort of thing. And so if batters don't shape up, then this is what can happen. I think it's both a threat to batters to step into the box and stay in the box. It's a threat to umpires who have to enforce the rule. It specifically says in the rule that the batter has to keep one foot in the box. And it's also to pitchers to stop screwing around and throw the damn ball. And I think that if that happens, that'll be to the betterment of the game. And, you know, there's discussions about, oh, well, the games are too long. It's 3 hours and so forth. Listen, some things that last 3 hours are great. I'm fine with watching an Indiana Jones movie if it's 2 hours and 55 minutes. That makes no difference to me because it's fun. And so that's what you want baseball to be, too. So it's possible that because of enforcing the pace of game rules, the game speeds up a lot or maybe a little or maybe not much at all. But it is really more about pace than length. If you can get just kind of that, you know, snappy action and, okay, let's go, let's throw the ball and let's make this thing happen, then I think that's fine. And then if the play, you know, the actual length of game goes from 303 to 259, there's not a huge difference, but things are progressing nicely, and, you know, there's kind of a rhythm to the game. I think that's the most important thing. I think that's what Major League Baseball wants, and I think ultimately that is probably what fans will want too.
He's Jonah Carey from Grantland, great baseball writer. Check out his work if you already don't. His book out right now, Up, Up, and Away, about the Montreal Expos, and I was his 100,000th Twitter follower. Jonah, thank you so much for your time. I hope we can do this again soon.
Thank you, Brett. I look forward to it.
That is Jonah Carey. We'll